Senate will be in order. Will everyone in the Senate and the galleries please rise for the prayer by the Reverend Gock and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
From the Epistle of 1 Peter we hear, humble yourself, therefore, under the mighty hand of God. Heavenly Father, we return with much work before us, and there are concerns in our hearts of what is needed and necessary. The pressure is slowly rising, and our human wisdom would have us dictate to you or sit on judgment on your will. And so we pray this day that we might surrender ourselves wholly, unreservedly, to your holy will. Let us quiet our souls' complaints and allow your joy and love direct our thoughts and actions so that your peace and gentle leading may open our hearts to say, Father, not my will, but yours be done. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Madam Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Igel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Kraus, Leibla, Munflinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schoff, Schatz, Shoup, Sipton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
Senator from the 8th. You are now, Senator. Senator from Phelps is here. Quorum being as present, the Senate is in session. Madam Secretary, please read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, 44th day, Tuesday, March 28th, 2017. The Senate met pursuant to adjournment. President Parson in the chair. Reverend Carl Gock offered the following prayer. Righteousness will go before him and will make a path for his steps. Psalm 85:13. My Lord and God, if we are to succeed in finding meaning to our lives, we know that we are to be a people of integrity and love. Only then will we succeed and find the significance you have pleaded there for us. Help us to be consistent, knowing that there are...
Senator from Cole, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I was enjoying the journal reading. The Senator from Phelps interrupted me. I move that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
Senator from Cole has moved that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and same be approved as fully read. Does any senator desire to be heard? Hearing none. Senator from Cole, we recognize close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
Those opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Introduction of guests. Senator from the 13th, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I would like to introduce some very special guests. Today, Mr. President, I met in my office with some young people from Matthews Dickey's Boys Club in St. Louis County and in St. Louis City, and they are seated behind me in the upper gallery, and they are here today as ambassadors for health. And they are accompanied by Mr. Bill Fronczak. I ask that the body make them feel welcome. They are directly behind me.
Would the guest of the senator from the 13th please rise? And would the senators in the chamber please make them welcome to the Missouri Senate? Introduction of guests. Senator from Cape Girardeau, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, it's my privilege to introduce Demodrius Anthony, who's up front. He from Cape Girardeau, Missouri, and Missouri Arts Council, also with his brothers Quentin Williams Jr., Quintray Williams, Dreama Hamilton, and Tor Shepherd, who are on the side over here, if they would all please stand and welcome them.
Would all the guests of the Senator from Cape Girardeau please rise, and would the members of the Senate please make them welcome to the Senate chamber. Introduction of guests, Senator from the 7th, purpose to rise.
President, it's my pleasure today to introduce for myself and on behalf of the Senator from the 9th, some fine young students who have visited, if they would please stand. We have from Paseo Academy the President of the Show Me Arts, Khalil Odoms, the Secretary of Show Me Arts from Paseo Academy, Maren Baron, the Vice President of the Show Me Arts from Paseo Academy, Trail White, and another member of the Paseo Academy, Ben Roth. If the body would make them feel welcome, I'd appreciate it.
Would the guests of the Senate from the 7th please rise and be recognized by the members of the Missouri Senate. Introduction of guests. Senator from the Johnson, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Introduction of very special guests.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. To my right and to your left, seated and standing, I have members from the Student Government Association from the University of Central Missouri and their advisor, Dr. Shari Bax. I have Luke Hawley, Chris Dunaway, Bo Kennedy, Trey Venerable, Julianne Kaufman, Courtney Apt, Zachary Walker, Israel Hinkey, Ray Reed, Tim Peterson, and Devontae Hare. And I ask the body please make them feel welcome.
Would the guests from the Senator from Johnson please rise, and would the body please make them welcome to the Missouri Senate. Introduction of guest. Senator from the 15th, what purpose do you rise?
Introduction of special guest.
You may proceed.
We have today Maya Rideout. She lives in Fenton. She's a fourth grader. At Concord Elementary. She loves to play soccer, and she also loves to read Harry Potter. And she was born at 1 pound, 15 ounces, and she is thriving today and doing great. So please make her feel welcome and make her page today to serve without comment.
Would the guests of the Senator from the 15th please rise, and would the Senate please make them welcome, and the young lady will be made page for a day. Introduction of guests, Senator from the 2nd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on your right and my left, we have members of the Wentzville Holt High School Band. They will be performing today in the rotunda, and I would ask that the members of this body make them feel welcome.
Would the guests of the Senator from the 2nd please rise, and would the members of the Senate please make them welcome. Introduction of guest, Senator from Cape Girardeau.
President, I had no money in my budget. I talked to the father of these young men up there, and he says it's a very large bank account, so I'd like them made pages for the day. They've already been performing at.
Senator, you may discuss that with their father. Introduction of guest. Introduction of guest. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Senator from Cole. Senator from Cole. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. You're doing a great job up there. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection. I'd ask you to recognize the Senator from Barton County on Senate Bill 190.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection. Senate Bill 190 with Senate Committee Substitute and Senate Substitute Number 2, Senator from Barton.
President, I would move that Senate Bill Perfection Calendar before the body perfection.
The Senator from Barton moves that Senate Bill Number 190 with Senate Committee Substitute be taken up for perfection. As many of those of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator, we are on the Senate substitute number 2 for...
Have I moved for its adoption?
You have moved for the adoption. We are now on that Senate substitute number 2 for Senate committee substitute for Senate Bill 190. You have the floor.
May I inquire of the Senator from St. Francis, please?
Senator from St. Francis, do you yield to an inquiry?
Yes, I do.
You may proceed, Senator.
Good morning, Senator. I don't know if your mic's on or not. Let me move it up a little bit, Senator. How's that?
That's better.
Yes, better.
Thank you.
I had some questions. I figured, and I know you're in a filibuster here, but I figured if we're going to be on the floor using session time, maybe we should have some constructive discussion between you and I over your concerns and maybe whether or not those concerns can be addressed somehow. I had some questions for you, and then if we've got time, we might just start walking through the bill, and you can tell me which of the issues you have the most concern with, and we can talk about what options might be available to us. Let me ask you this question first. I mean, if we don't do anything now, and I'm assuming that just from the discussion yesterday that there is nothing that at least you're suggesting that we do now, where do you see us being, say, in 10 years in terms of the grid and the performance of the grid? Or what do you see happening over the next 10 years?
I would say that if the utility companies would use the what's available to them now, I mean, we've seen over the last, out of the last 10 years, three different times where plant and service was well over $1 billion going before the rate case for a given year. So the opportunity for them to spend more than $700 million is there if there's a real need to replace that infrastructure.
So is that what you're anticipating? I'm asking... I mean, I know, and you went through that yesterday, and I understand that. I'm saying, what do you see happening? What in your mind is likely to happen over the next 10 years? Let's just say if we do nothing now. I don't know. That's the cleanest way to do it.
Well, if history is a good indicator at all, we will have a successful, reliable grid with meeting all the needs of our constituency for the power that they need.
Okay, so you don't see any change happening.
I do not see a need for any change happening. And let me ask you this question. Do you think this has anything to do with the market value, the stock value of the utility companies, this bill going forward that you presented? Do you think it will increase their value on the stock market?
I don't, Senator, but if I've got some other questions, if you don't mind.
Let me follow up with that, if you don't mind. Just this morning I got an email from a brokerage firm out of New York, Carlson Capital. I mean, it says, dear Senator Romine, I listened to the legislative session yesterday in your commentary regarding Senate Bill 190. I believe that you make some very valid points. However, seeing that some of your last year's opponents have changed heart, which is only one, as they see the benefits that the bill provides for utility customers in Missouri, given that the bill has now been placed on the informal calendar, I was wondering if you would provide me a few minutes to speak your thoughts on the bill's prospects for the remainder of the legislative session. Now, we've gotten calls to my office. I won't take the calls, but I did get an email from Matthew Davis from this brokerage firm. I'm sorry, but that's sad to say that this bill's about Ameren stock value and what's going to happen to it if this bill's passed.
Well, I mean, Senator, just before I get back to my inquiry, one of the things I guess I would say is that I really don't have a problem with Ameren being successful or KCP&L being successful or Empire. I mean, certainly their management, their business plans, everything has an impact on that. One of the agencies that's responsible to ensure that happens, that they're successful, is the Public Service Commission. You know,
right.
That's one of the things they have to bring into that. If Ameren went out of business or had to shut down part of their service territory, the Public Service Commission would be the ones we would go to and say, what happened? How did this happen? Why did this happen? If in fact we started to see some major disruptions in the delivery or the reliability of energy, the Public Service Commission would be the ones that we would, as a public and as a Senate, would look to and say, how did you let this happen? you know, what should have been going on here, and why weren't you watching the ship? The Public Service Commission is watching the ship.
They are watching
They're watching it from both directions. They have two responsibilities, I think, Senator. One is to make sure that these companies are viable. The other is to make sure that these companies are economical and efficient and that they are reliable. They work on all of those things equally, and that's the reason I think whenever somebody brings up a success, an element of success for one of these companies and says, well, you know, success is an example that they don't need to do anything different. That success is guaranteed by the Public Service Commission. But I still am not sure I understand what your vision is, say, for the next, and I'm just saying 10 years because that's a reasonable number for us to, I think out.
I would say that, you know, just as you mentioned, the PSC is our watchdog. And I you know, when somebody is trying to push a bill that's self-serving, such as utility companies are doing with this bill, and you know the witnesses that were at the Commerce Hearing Committee was the three utility companies, Doe Run, and one of the manufacturers of smart meters. Did I miss
anybody? Let me interrupt you just a second, Senator, because I think, I mean, I understand you're making the presumption that's, quote, self-serving. I'm not sure what you're trying to imply with that. I don't know that I would agree that that's a proper description of
this. Well, let me say it this way. You mentioned the PSC.
This is my inquiry.
If the PSC is the watchdog.
Can I just finish my inquiry, though?
Sure.
Since, you know, what happens in a regulated monopoly, and I know you know this, you're familiar with this, you've studied these issues carefully. What happens in a regulated monopoly is the same thing in this arena as happens in the private sector. Whatever the structure is, everybody in it should be working towards doing the best in that structure. Sometimes in a regulated monopoly, that means changing the way the regulations either are imposed or changing the regulations that are imposed. And so I'm happy that any company that is a regulated monopoly is constantly looking for ways that says, how can this work better? Not just for the company, but for the consumer. Because you're in business, you are a businessman. You know that if something isn't good for your customer, that it's probably in the long run not going to be good for you. Now that to me is one of the elements of that. I'm going to move on to another question because I would have loved to have seen some description of what you feel like will happen with the grid, with the, you know, with the deliverability, with the reliability over the next 10 years, if nothing changes, and especially given what other states have done and what KCP&L, for example, has done out of Kansas City, and just whether or not that would have changed. But I think it would. I think that implementing this Senate Bill 190 now is better than implementing it next year or the next year or the next year, because I think it will have effects for more than 10 years. I think it will have benefits for consumers. I think it will help stabilize prices. I think it will help reduce us from a 7%. I know it will reduce us from a, well, for 3 years, it would be a no increase. So the customers for 3 years would get no increases on their bills. And then after that 3 years, it would be capped at 3%. Per year, where now they're getting 6-7%. So it's hard for me to say that's self-serving when a company does that. But
can I finish my answer? You, I mean, you asked the question. Can I finish my answer?
Sure. If you're talking about
my response was about this bill being self-serving to the industry itself. But I also want to comment on the fact that if the PSC is the watchdog, as you, and this is a follow-up on your comments. The PSC is the watchdog. I do not see the PSC telling us they need something fixed in the rate-making process. They're the ones that has to deal with this. They're the ones that should be coming to the legislative body saying, we have a problem in this area. We need to be able to improve our regulation process, so therefore give us the tool by statute to allow us to implement some of these things. The very thing that this bill is offering, whether it's PISA, whether it's transmission, whether it's property tax, are things that the utilities companies have taken into a rate case and have been denied by the PSC. Now we're wanting to have it done through legislation and force the PSC to accept these things.
Right.
That's the problem I have with the bill.
Yeah, some of these, Senator, are not allowed right now by the PSC.
So correct.
In fact, there's a number of things in here in the bill that we are allowing. That
so
they
now
said,
we're going to try to force the PSC to do them by administering this legislation.
Let us do these things, and we've allowed those things in the bill. So we have given them considerable flexibility.
We're giving them a mandate.
What do you see, Senator, absent this bill? We know with the bill we have some idea some predictability on prices. We know for 3 years there won't be any increases. We know after that it won't be over, other than the first year when it could be a 9%, because that would be the accumulation of the 3 years postponed, so somewhat time devalued. But we know that then after that there would be capped at 3% for the period that they were under this bill. So that we know what that is if we pass the bill. What do you see, what do you anticipate or envision happening to pricing over the next 10 years absent the bill? I mean, given the history that we have to date, what do you see happening?
Well, in your inquiry with the senator from the 13th yesterday, in your words, you said that the normal rate-making process would not be changed. Is that not correct?
I said the oversight of the PSC will be
I think you said the rate-making process was the words that you used.
Well, if we're talking about a rate case, that's right. The rate cases will be handled the same way they are.
They'll be handled the same way. The only thing different is there are going to be add-ons of the PISA, add-on of transmission, and add-on of property tax.
So all under that 3%, right.
So without the bill, then we will continue to see the rate increases as we've seen them historically. With this bill, we're going to see them increase similarly, with the addition of PISA, with the addition of property tax, with the addition of transmission costs.
Well, Senator, what do you see causing those rates not to increase given the history that we've had? You're saying that we won't see rate increases?
No, we'll see the normal rate increases
that we've
seen.
Which is about 7%, 6% to 7% a year.
Right.
Okay, so you're expecting, and now you were mentioning, I think you in your debate with the Senator from Butler the other day were talking about the number that the last Ameren rate case, I think that was a black box settlement rather than a PSC rule, but you were talking about the rate that they came out with was that about 8%?
That's, yes.
Okay, so that was an increase of 8%.
But they ended up only getting 4%.
Okay, so they came out, they asked for 8, they got about 4, right?
3.7.
So they don't really get to determine.
Right, they negotiated out on that.
Yeah, so whatever their rate is, somebody else is setting that, right?
That was determined by, I guess, mutual agreement between the parties. Yes.
Okay. So the stakeholders were there, and the stakeholders all worked that out. And frankly, Senator, any one of those stakeholders could have legitimate concerns about the regulatory process, couldn't they?
Absolutely.
I mean, it doesn't have to come from the PSC.
Correct.
I mean, any stakeholder could say, look, we would like to see this change. We'd like to see a different way to the rate, that the rate making is done, or that the regulations are applied. So I don't know that I agree that the PSC has to be the one that brings suggested change. I think our job as legislators is, regardless of who brings the suggestions in for regulatory change. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Senator. Mr. President, I think we have a guest.
Three senators standing. Senator from the fifth, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to seek unanimous consent to introduce a very special guest.
Hearing no objection, Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, to my right and to your left, we have in the chamber with us today the president of Harris Stowe State University, Dr. Womack, along with Mr. Brown, and in the upper chamber, we have the students of Harris Stowe State University. I would like the chamber to welcome them and make them feel real welcome. For the first time in history, Harris Stowe State University, because of each and every one of you, we were able to offer Harris Stowe the same thing that is offered in other universities, and that is the graduate program. They were the only ones that was not able to offer their graduate program. And so we did it for them last year. But I want to just say thank each and every one of you for helping us with that. And let's give them a round of applause and make them feel welcome for their outstanding work as a university, a historically black university. Thank you, Mr.
Would the guest of the Senator from the Fifth please rise? And would the Senate chamber please recognize the guest of the Senator from the Fifth? Senators, you may continue your debate.
Thank you, Mr. President, and I apologize to the Senator for not recognizing that she was trying to introduce a guest. And, Senator, I think, you know, one of the things that I think we have to acknowledge, I'm sure you've read the PSC's report that came out, or at least have read parts of it. And, you know, one of the things they said was that there were change needed to the regulatory environment in order to foster greater grid modernization. So they have even acknowledged. Now, the PSC doesn't often, I've been working on these issues for, I guess, over a decade. I don't know that the PSC, I'm trying to remember, I don't trust my memory 100% here, Senator, but I don't remember a time when the PSC has come to us asking us to make changes in regulation. I think part of that is because they see their job as implementing the regulations that we authorize and that we instruct. And so I don't know that they see their role is that the effective part? The largest change I can remember in PSC oversight was in the telecom industry, and they certainly were not in favor of that regulatory reform. But it has been amazingly effective in the state of Missouri once we did that regulatory reform. So I don't know that who brings it necessarily validates it or invalidates it.
Let me give you an example. I've been working on this ever since I've been up here, obviously, and it's been an issue. So this past year I decided I was going to work very hard to see if there was common ground or a solution to the issue. We were talking about regulatory lag being the issue. The latest largest consumer of electricity happens to be my constituent, Doe Run. And so Doe Run called me and said, hey, we would like to see if there is a compromise or if there is a position we can take on resolving this issue. So we proceeded to go through an exercise this summer to see what removing regulatory lag would be, which is basically PISA, Plan Service Accounting. By the time the exercise was over during the course of the summer, it was determined it was cost prohibitive. Doe Run was ready to ask me, I guess, I was ready to prepare or consider offering a bill that would dealt with regulatory lag. But once we went through the exercise, Doe Run said it's cost prohibitive, we cannot support that, will not support that. And so that was the end of that. I thought we could find something, but it became cost prohibitive. And then what happens? Doe Run's given a special rate so that they wouldn't oppose the bill because they knew the bill was cost prohibitive for them, but throw the rest of their peers under the bus by saying it's cost prohibitive for us, but everybody else can pay for it.
Let's talk about
it. I mean, that's an individual company that if the bill would have been good, if removing regulatory lag would have been good, you had a company like Doe Run ready to stand up and ask me or somebody else to carry a bill to go forward. But they realized it was not good for business, and they did not proceed down that path.
Was that the last conversation you had with them, Senator?
Yes.
At that time? Okay. Let's talk about big purchasers, because Noranda was another one that was a major.
Right, and Noranda even went in and asked for a special rate, and their biggest resistance came from Ameren, until Ameren needed them to try to get a bill passed, and then they brought them on board and said, we'll give you a special rate in this bill if you will help us pass this bill.
Right.
That's bribery. Philosophically, I got a problem with how that type of bill gets processed and gets into the system.
Well, these are, as you know, Senator, these are, you know, electricity, water, sewer, gas. Those are they are complicated regulatory issues, and the interested parties, the stakeholders, all have interests to consider and interests to protect. And so there is a lot of discussion. It's very similar to what happens here when we have bills on the floor and we try to work together because we make trades sometimes because we're looking for that spot where everybody benefits. If we don't all benefit, we at least are preserved in where we are. And so let's talk about Noranda just a minute. And I frankly don't contribute Noranda's failure entirely to the electricity.
No, I agree.
I'm sure
commodity
you don't
pricing
even
is very tough.
But I want to look at the impact that's had on the system, and then maybe come back to Doe Run for just a minute. Because, I mean, do you have a sense, Senator, of what the impact has been in your area to utility consumers because of Noranda's failure?
I do know that Ameren's profits have been the same or higher since Noranda's left the grid.
What about,
so
the,
did
bills?
Not
what about the bills
Ameren.
to your constituents? Do you know how they've been affected?
I have not seen or heard.
They've gone up considerably because all the load that Noranda was covering have come back onto the system, and now those rates are going up to accommodate.
Point that I'm trying to make is that Ameren has no skin in the game. Everything that we do with the utility bills protects them and allows them not that 9.5% return on equity, they never have to feel the pain. They just pass it on to the other consumers.
You know,
just
you
like
know
the EDR, when the big companies like Go Run get that EDR,
right.
What they don't pay gets pushed down to the rest of the consumers.
You know that that's not a guaranteed return.
It's not, but they get it.
Yeah, they frequently are successful in achieving it. They're not always. They don't have to give back at present what they over. They don't get to make up what they're under. We're going to have another bill sometime that actually addresses some of that with another industry. But it is one of those areas where I think sometimes that's portrayed as a guaranteed return, which it's not. I think the investment community that you're hearing from understands that. I think they understand that's not a guaranteed return. I think that's one of the reasons they are looking for some predictability, some way to kind of anticipate, because that's one of the reasons I ask you about your 10-year forecast of what you think is going to happen. Those people are looking out 10 years. They're saying what's likely to happen in Missouri over the next 10 years with this bill, without this bill. What's going to happen here? We know that we're in company with about three other states that haven't upgraded the grid. One of the things I think we should, and I think Ameren did consider, because this was in their territory as well as it's in yours, with Dole Run, is that Dole Run is a major consumer. They carry a heavy part of the fixed cost of distribution of energy in their area. And if we were to lose them to that network, that would be a significant hit on the prices. And when I say significant, I'm not talking about doubling their costs, but I would expect it would be $2-3 per month per bill in that range. I'm guessing that would be a reasonable range if we lost Dole Run. And I know you know this, but I just think it's important. Is that, you know, Dole Run has a couple of natural gas pipelines that either, I think they run actually under their property. They're certainly very near their property, where they would have a competitive situation. I don't know how interested you are or how much you know about the railroad industry, but anytime you're in a business of rail transfer, the one thing that you look for is, are there two sets of rails, not just one, because it makes all the difference in the world. And so it's my understanding there are two rails there. There are two natural gas pipelines. Dole Run could probably get a very, very effective rate for natural gas. They could build their own combined cycle generation plant. They could completely move off the grid and be in control of their own destiny, so to speak. I know for a fact that they have. If I was Dole Run, I would definitely have engineers working on that. I would have economists and engineers saying, "Bring me a recommendation as to what has to be in place for this to make sense for us." I would be looking at it. I said that to one of the executives at Dole Run, and his comment was, well, we are looking at that. And so we do have to consider that. And I think that as consumers in that area, they don't want to lose Dole Run. And frankly, the economic development part of this bill, Senator, would reduce rates rather than increase them. Because what it says is, if Dole Run expands, if they actually expand by a certain amount in terms of their gas purchases, then they on the expansion, they would get a new rate. That rate, according to the Public Service Review, would have to mean that everybody else's rate went down or at least didn't go up. But I think it actually says it has to be a benefit. So everybody else's rate goes down. That we can't do that right now. We can't do the PSC cannot authorize that rate right now. This would allow the PSC to look at that, say that is good for all consumers, and I authorize that rate. It also allows that for other companies that might be offering to come into the state, and they would have to demonstrate that their impact on the overall cost to every other consumer would
be. But there is an avenue for Dole Run to go before the PSC and ask for a special rate.
Pardon?
There is an avenue for Dole Run to go before the PSC and ask for a special rate.
Right, but the PSC couldn't unilaterally grant that special rate.
No, they'd have to go through a hearing process to get it, and that was my recommendation to Dole Run. Rather than count their chickens on this particular bill of getting that, they ought to take all three paths, the one you're talking about.
Do they have the capital? I guess they're big enough, because that would cost them $1 to $3 million. Do they have the capital to do that?
I do not know their financials. I don't know that.
Okay, because if they requested that, they would have to pay for the rate case. Now, today, usually it's the electric company that comes in they file the rate case, and it's typically because the rates have gotten behind what it's costing them to provide the service. They come in, make their case to the PSC, and they either decide to award them a rate or not award them a rate increase based on their review of prudency. And so they pay the bills for the rate case. But if Doe-Run were to ask for that, they would have to pay those bills. And so that can be a hindrance to somebody asking that, and it might be cheaper for them to put that $3 million into a natural gas combined cycle generating plant. But that would definitely harm the constituents in your area because you would lose Doe Run, and that's not an unrealistic. I'm not just speculating, Senator. Those are evaluations that are actually being done as we speak. And I guess, and you know the process well enough. I think you mentioned that we talked about the 4% increase that Ameren got. And you know the process well enough to know that they didn't just increase. They had to go through a process. There had to be a whole lot of agreement because they didn't even bring it to the Public Service Commission. So that all their customers agreed after reviewing Ameren's financials and their operating plans and other things. I mean, you understand that the customers all agreed to a 4% increase, don't you?
Correct.
Okay, and I think that sometimes is misunderstood. When we come out here, it's like, well, Ameren just raised their rates 4%. No, they didn't. All of the collective stakeholders raised Ameren's rates 4%. Ameren, as you pointed out, brought in an 8% proposal. They obviously couldn't support it with all the other ratepayers, but the ratepayers did come to an agreement, didn't even have to go to the PSC. They acknowledged that that was a necessary increase to Ameren's revenues in order for them to continue to be viable and continue to provide. Do you know what the PSC considers before setting the rates in a rate case?
Well, the common term is all relevant factors, their cost of doing business, their infrastructure replacement that they've done, Mother Nature, whatever emergency repairs that they've done. There's just a myriad of items that has to be considered going into the rate case. What is you have to lay your financials out there to show where your expenses and income has come from.
Can the PSC say no to a rate increase request?
Yes. Or they can say no to certain aspects that they deem that they're not necessary or valid or prudent.
Okay. Does the PSC review the CEO's compensation package?
The details of the review, I couldn't stand here and tell you.
They do, Senator. They have to sign off.
And are you comfortable with a $6.5 million CEO?
Well, when you're looking at, are you talking about the part allocated to Missouri, the part allocated to Illinois? Which part of that are you talking about?
Well, I mean, even half, that's a considerable amount of money to be paid.
Yeah, I don't think we're half. But you're just talking about the part that would be Missouri, that the PSC would look at.
Right.
Yeah, they're the ones that I thought you wanted to be the final judge on how that was done. I mean, you and my discussions have sometimes conflicted in that arena, is that you seem to have full trust in the PSC. I don't always. And so I don't know why you wouldn't trust them there as well.
We wanted to raise a valid point. We think that the public needs to not be aware of what the administrator of the Ameren, and I have not saying that the PSC is perfect. If I had the chance to voice my concern with them on that issue, which I have, is allowing the CEO to make that much money is wrong.
No. And I think one of the reasons, for example, that, you know, back, if we want to go back to our Doe Run discussion just quickly, one of the reasons that Doe Run wouldn't probably be very excited about going to the PSC is because one PSC cannot bind another PSC, similar to the legislative issues that we handle sometimes. And so it would be, once again, you still have that same lack of predictability. So there are other aspects to that I think have to be considered that sometimes don't always come out in the course of debate. Senator, I had some other questions here. I'm trying to see if any of them significant enough to bring up before the body. I guess probably the last one that I wanted to ask you is, if you had to describe to a third party your picture of what the PSC's objective is in their application of regulations, how would you describe that?
Their application would be to make sure that any investment that the utility companies make, because an investment becomes an asset and the asset becomes their equity that their return is based upon, is that it is prudent and it's truly used and useful for the process of providing solid and perfect utilities.
And I bet you would agree that the PSC staff is an exceptionally good staff.
We have an exceptionally good staff at the PSC, I believe.
I mean, I don't always agree with their conclusions. I don't always agree with how they come out, but I have never seen a lack of professionalism there. I've never seen a lack of expertise there. They really do seem to understand issues, and I just don't always agree with how they think about them. So that would be the job of the PSC. To work through that and make decisions. And that job is preserved because each of these applications has to come through a rate case before it actually enters, before it comes out of that asset account. With Senate Bill 190, all it does is allow the accumulation of value in an asset account. And then once another rate case is filed, the utility would have to file a rate case, a conventional general rate case. They would bring all of those asset accounts before the Public Service Commission, who would make those same reviews, apply those same standards before those asset accounts were allowed to become dollar bills. And I think that is an important thing for all of us to remember. Senator, I have appreciated your patience with the inquiry this morning. Thank you for taking my inquiry. Mr. President.
Senator from Barton.
That bill on the informal calendar, and I think I have some guests to introduce. I can get unanimous consent for that.
That bill will be laid on the informal calendar. Now, Senator from Barton, you seek recognition for?
I seek unanimous consent to introduce special guests.
Hearing no objection, Senator, you may proceed with your introduction of special guests.
Mr. President, I have, a couple of introductions this morning. Of both from the Lamar High School. The first is our Lamar cross country team. We have some seniors from that team here today. I'm going to read the seniors' names, and if they'll stand, I'm hoping cross country is up there along with football. That is Jesse Compton, Will Hagen, and Kip Rowland. Is our cross country team here? All right, maybe the cross country team hasn't made it yet. They won state in division in class 2 this year, and I wanted to introduce them to the body and ask the body to congratulate them. I don't see them standing, so maybe the cross country team hasn't made it here yet today. But then I have a second introduction with your permission, Mr. President.
You may proceed with your second introduction.
Second introduction is of the Lamar High School football team. They set a pretty impressive record this year. They won a 14. Their season was 14-0. Their season win-loss record. The seniors that are here with us today, and I will read their names in a minute, Mr. President. But the seniors have a career win-loss record of 57 wins, 2 losses. And even more phenomenal, Mr. President, is that Lamar High School football team won their sixth consecutive state championship in 2016 on November 25th at Plaster Stadium at MSU in Springfield. Never before in the history of Missouri has a high school won consecutive state championships. This team did that. I'm sure if you were to talk to the seniors on this team, they would be the first to acknowledge that it wasn't just them. There were a lot of others on that team, but I'd like to introduce the seniors. And if I could get them to stand as I introduce them. J.D. Allen, Sam Buzzard, Angel Contreras, Kristen Foster, Hunter Gepner, Luke Hardman, Will Jeffries, Bryce Mason, Trey Mooney, Kendall Morrow, Kyler Overstreet, Tanner Phipps, Matt Wyman, Anthony Wilkerson, Coach Scott Bailey is here today. You can't win 6 state championships without there being a program, not just a team, Senator. Their superintendent, Dr. Zach Harris, is with them. The athletic director, Dale Patton, is with them. I would ask the body if they would please congratulate and welcome the Lamar High School Seniors Chamber.
Let's please welcome the two guest requests of the Senator from Barton for six straight championships to the state of Missouri. So let's please make them welcome to the chamber today. Senator, I'm sure they can hear you out in the hallways. Senator from Cole.
Six straight championships, Mr. President. That's impressive. Mr. President, without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection, and I'd ask that you call the calendar.
Okay. Hearing no objection, the Senate will go to the order of Senate bills for perfection. Senate Bill number 184, Senator from Barton.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 184 brought from the perfection calendar before the body for perfection.
Senator from Barton moves that Senate Bill number 184 be taken up for perfection. As many as that opinion, that motion shall prevail. Say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Barton.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I have a floor substitute. I'm quickly signing it so that I can send it forward. And I move for its adoption. It is being distributed. I would ask.
Senator, you need to send your substitute forward.
Sending it forward.
And are you asking for reading, for the reading to be waived?
Reading be waived, and I will not close until it has been distributed.
Hearing no objection, the reading will be waived. Senators move for the adoption. Senator, do you care to explain your substitute?
I would like to do that, Mr. President. The substitute adds a cap, a dollar cap, and I'll explain that further when I move into the bill. It distinguishes commercial purchasers from residential so that all residential customers have a $4 per month maximum cap on any surcharges that would have to be distributed via the revenue stabilization mechanism. Has a 10% monthly surcharge cap on other purchasers. Allows the PSC to review production costs, actually review the production costs for prudency. It clarifies that the reports filed during a rate case on changes in demand and educational outreach be submitted at an initial filing date early enough so the interveners have a chance and an opportunity to comment before their action or the PSC. And then it, after 2027, it establishes that anybody can challenge the RSM, and it can either be modified or maybe just eliminated. I'd like to speak a little bit also on the overall impact of the bill. First of all, one of the things that any of us as utility consumers would like is as predictable a rate as possible. And I think one of the things that revenue management brings to the utility, to in this case water utilities and sewer utilities, is predictability. It allows customers to have a better idea of what their risk is in terms of cost. There are two caps. The ones that I just mentioned is one, and that is how much the effect would be on individual customers. The other cap is on the revenue that a water company can actually accumulate. So we've got two caps in the bill. One is that the amount of revenue that the water company gets is capped, and the other is the amount of increase in a customer's bill is capped. In this case, what we have is a really positive situation because currently both the water company and the customers are at risk. And the reason they're at risk is because what brings the risk is the weather. In the case of water sales, in a very dry year, and we're talking about year to year here, Mr. President, we're talking about annual type true ups, but year to year, we may have a dry year, or we may have a wet year, or we may have an average year. But if we have a very dry year, then water usage tends to go up significantly, and the revenues that a water company would gather
are also significantly above than whatever might have been their typical rate. If we have a very wet year, on the other hand, Mr. President, what we see is that the water volumes purchased go down significantly. So the revenues fall significantly to the water company. Now, one of the problems that creates with customers is obviously you would rather pay a...
Senate will come to order. So the senator can finish his explanation of the Senate substitute. Senator from Barton, you may continue.
Thanks, Mr. President. So one of the problems there, obviously, is you and I, as rate payers, we don't like to see these big swings in our bills. We would rather they weren't as big as swings. We didn't get caught off guard with a high bill, at least. One of the problems on the purchase or supplier side is that when revenues significantly drop below what they had anticipated, it has a negative impact on the business plan. It can cause them to schedule maintenance or have to reschedule maintenance or other things because of cash flow problems. There are a number of other things that can happen. So there's, and that is all due to the weather, and the weather brings the risk. So what we're trying to do here, Mr. President, is reduce the risk both on the customers and on the supplier, the water utility. And the way that is being done is what is called this revenue stabilization mechanism. It goes all the way back, Mr. President, to the actual rate case. It would have to begin with a rate case. If a company applied for it, they would come into a rate case. Normally, in a rate case, the final result of that rate case is a certain price per gallon of water, for example, and then that price would be the tariff that the water company would be allowed to apply to each of our bills. So according to our usage, we would pay per gallon rates. What the revenue stabilization mechanism does is it takes that one step further. It says, all right, the Public Service Commission is going to do exactly that same work. They're going to come in. They're going to establish the value of that water, what that water value would be, and grant that as a tariff. But then they're going to take another step. They're going to look at history, and they're going to anticipate what the actual purchases of water would be in a normal year. And then instead of telling that company that you can – well, and then they're going to authorize that amount of revenue for that corporation. So instead of having that corporation walk away from that rate case with a dollar – a cents per gallon, a 2 cent per gallon rate – they would come up out with a 2 cent per gallon times what we think is going to be your sales. So here's the total dollar value for your corporation for the year 2017, for the year 2018, that we expect you, that this is the revenue we expect you to accumulate and that we authorize. So they're authorizing a revenue. It's the same revenue that they would be authorizing if they just did the rate, but they're actually doing that calculation and making it a dollar figure. The way that then gets applied, Mr. President, is that if at the end of that year we've had a very dry year, and so you and I have used a lot more water than we anticipated, then we will have paid considerably more money for water than the Public Service Commission authorized because they didn't anticipate a dry year. They anticipated an average year. So what that water company will have to do then, they'll have to give us that money back. Because they were not authorized for an exceptional year, they were authorized for an average year of revenue stream. Now, the opposite could also happen, Mr. President. It's possible that we could have a very wet year, and so when they come back, and this bill requires that every year they come in for an annual true up. So this would happen once they opted into this. Every year they would come before the Public Service Commission, and that's when these calculations would be made. That's when the true ups would occur. If there was a very wet year, then that company would have a significantly less revenue that they collected that year than they were authorized. In the past, they would just lose that, in the same way the customers would have lost it in the year before. With this, we keep all that even. So nobody ever pays more for water than it's worth. Nobody ever pays less for water than it's worth. They're always paying virtually the same thing for water. Now, whenever there's a – oh, okay. And I think we have a guest. You wanna, good. Yeah, go ahead.
Senator from the 7th, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, my apologies to Senator from Barton, and I do actually want to talk about his bill when he gets done with his introduction of the substitute. But in the meantime, and I appreciate his graciousness in allowing the guests of my office.
Senator, are you asking for?
I seek unanimous consent to introduce special guests.
Hearing no objections, Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. So it's my pleasure today to introduce Vicki Woolgrass, the president of the South Kansas City Chamber of Commerce. And today with her, she has a leadership class of civic leaders in South Kansas City and Grandview that have come to the Capitol today to watch government in action and to share their knowledge of their civic understanding and learn from us as well. And we appreciate them visiting. And I ask the body to make them feel welcome as they go about their day.
Would the guest of the Senator from the 7th please rise and be recognized by the Missouri Senate? Senator from Barton, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think where I was is if they had a particularly wet year, and we didn't buy as much water as we thought we would. And so the revenue that was collected that year would be below what the water company needed to meet their expenses. Then the Public Service Commission, when that true-up was happened, they could authorize then a recovery of that value of that water. And that's the way that would work out, so that we would never pay more for water, but we would pay for it more evenly and according to a revenue stream rather than strictly the use. Now, this is an advantage both to those, actually it's the biggest advantage to those who use less water, because they still get all the advantage of reduced monthly bills as they use less water. But they also get the advantage of those high water users, and this all applies to residential, President. They get of all those high value users that are actually carrying more of the fixed cost because they're high volume users. If you have a swimming pool and I don't, then you're kind of carrying me, because we're averaging those numbers, and corporate number at the end of the year, annual number that's trued up. The advantage of that is nobody ever pays more than the water's worth, and the companies are never paid less than the water's worth. I know there are going to be some questions on this, Mr. President. I think it's a fairly simple process, but if it's not, then I'm happy to try to answer questions. And I think there may be others that want to comment on the bill.
Does any senator desire to be heard on the Senate substitute? Senator from the 24th, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President, to inquire of the Senator from Barton.
Senator from Barton, you yield from inquiry from the Senator from the 24th. Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Senator.
Senator.
You are the utility senator, it seems like, or the deregulation senator. Maybe that's a more...
I do my part in supporting them.
yes, you do. So I wanted
I'm talking about my bills.
I wanted to start by going through the differences between your Senate substitute, which I'm just seeing for the first time, I think all of us are, and the original bill. And I noticed right out of the gate, and this is all I've really had time to notice because I was trying to listen to what you said, but there are the first section is brand new up to page 4. So could we just kind of go through there and see what that is and what your intent is? And I would like to go through it section by section. So it starts with definitions.
Right.
Right? Eligible lending institutions. Institution. So... this is a financial institution eligible to make commercial or agricultural loans or discount or purchase such loans, and is a public depository of state funds or obtains its funds through the issuance of obligations either directly or through a related entity. Why is that definition in here? Why is it needed in your bill?
Senator, I confess that's not one of the things that I spent a lot of time on, and I'm not sure that I... I'd have to...
All right, well, maybe somebody will get an answer to you as we go on. Now you're going to give definitions of different sizes of entities. So subsection 2, very small sewer corporation. A sewer corporation...
Senator,
yeah.
Can I pause this inquiry just long enough to do
yes,
an introduction?
Of course.
Mr. President.
Senator from Barton, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Mr. President, I'm seeking unanimous consent to introduce special guests.
Hearing no objection, Senator from Barton, you may proceed with the introduction of your special guest.
I've had an element of confusion introductions this morning, Mr. President. I was just instructed that what I thought was the Lamar football team is actually the Harrisonville football team, who also won a state championship. They didn't win six, but they did win the state championship this year. And I would I don't have all their names. There are 45 students that are here. They're in the upper gallery. I'm sure they were baffled by my introduction earlier, but I am glad that I finally got the accurate information. I would ask the body to please welcome the Harrisonville football team, state champion.
Would the guest of the Senator from Barton please rise and be recognized by the Missouri Senate, and congratulations on your accomplishments. Senator from the 24th, you may proceed with your inquiry.
Thank you, Mr. President. So, Senator, did you introduce the wrong bill?
No, I'm sorry. I just figured out what's going on here.
Okay.
This is actually the Senator from Capes language.
Okay.
That was part of the substitute. I forgot to mention that whenever I was introducing the substitute, was that we also added I don't remember what his Senate bill number was, but he had a problem in his district with a very small water company that was on its last leg, so to speak, and there was some significant impact on the small group of people that it served, and the senator from Cape was trying to come up with a better scheme to try to manage that. It's very difficult. We've got dozens and dozens of these all over the state that are water companies that are just hanging on by the skin of their teeth, and when they go under, all of a sudden somebody has no water. And so the senator from Cape was trying to address that. That's the bill. That bill was added to this. And I would encourage you to inquire of him.
I will do that.
Okay.
So if I may ask you to sit down, and I'll be coming right back at you.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you. Mr. President.
Senator from the 24th, what person do you seek recognition?
Thank you, Mr. President, to inquire of the senator from Cape.
Senator from Cape Girardeau, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the 24th? You may proceed, Senator.
Good morning, Senator. How are you?
Morning, Senator.
So I just wanted to go through this new addition to the bill, and this is a bill that you have?
Yes, this was Senate Bill 145 that was heard in committee.
Okay.
And there was no opposition to it.
Okay. Has it been voted out of committee yet?
Yes. Yes, it had been voted out of committee.
Okay. All right. Can we just go through it so that I...
And let me give you the background of this.
Sure.
I mean, I know it's your inquiry, but if you'd like me to give you the background, why... Okay.
That'd be great.
Well, in my district, just outside of Cape Girardeau, Hillcrest Subdivision, 218 residential customers, an apartment of 20 customers, and then a service station as well. They've had continuing water problems and sewer problems.
I'm going to ask you to pause for just a minute because I think in just a moment we're going to be interrupted for the introduction of a guest. So
sure.
Before you get too far in, if you don't mind.
Three senators standing. Senator from the 2nd, why do you seek recognition?
Seeking unanimous consent to introduce some very special guests.
Hearing no objection, you may proceed.
I thank the senator from the 24th. Mr. President, on your right and my left, I have some very special guests here today with the March of Dimes. There are Ella and Jake and their mom, Ashley, as well as their friends Haley, Clyson, and Stacy. I'd ask the body to make them feel welcome.
Would the guests of the Senate from the 2nd please rise, and would the body please welcome them to the Missouri Senate. Senator from the 24th, you may proceed.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt your story, but let's please get started again. So this is a population of 218, I think you said?
218 people, yes.
Uh-huh.
So it's a very small water district, and the original owner... kind of let it deteriorate, and the original owner then sold it to another investor who put some money into it. PSC approved it, however...
PSC approved the sale.
They approved the sale, yes.
Right. And the sale was to a private company?
Yes, a private investor company.
Okay.
And this investor then couldn't get financing because he's had a lot of problems.
So I'm
documented
just curious.
Here.
I'm just curious about that.
Yeah.
So the PSC approved it before they knew that the investor couldn't get
it? No, they already knew what the interest rate was going to be. He tried to get a commercial loan and couldn't, so he had another shell company give himself a loan. And all this was known before approval by the PSC. They knew about it. It wasn't after approval. It was before approval.
So
the approval, in my mind, was probably questionable. I mean, I know if I was on the PSC, I couldn't have approved this at all. In fact, it's being contested in court right now by the Office of
Public Counsel.
Yeah, by Public
and,
Counsel.
And what year did you say that this approval occurred? I'm sorry. What year did you say that the PSC approved this sale?
What year?
Uh-huh. Do you recall?
It was about a year ago, I think.
Oh, so.
Yeah,
okay.
Very recently.
In history. Right. Okay, got it.
And so he gave himself a loan at 14%. Now, if you want to remember, this was before the Federal Reserve started raising interest rates.
Right.
They were basically at zero at that time.
Right.
But because of his questionable activities, back taxes and all sorts of things, he couldn't get a loan, as imagined, from a lending institution. So he had one of the shell companies give himself a loan.
And to make 14% on that loan, right.
At 14%.
I would have given it to him at 13.
Yeah. If I was him, I'd have given myself a loan at 20%.
Right.
Because I know I'm going to get it back from my customers, which then he proceeded to do. So he had a lot of debt.
Right.
And his debt-to-equity ratio was 19% equity and 81% debt.
Oh, my. Right.
And you can tell that...
All right, so you're still telling me. Okay, so that's what happened.
So he had a very high financing fee, which, of course, he doesn't pay it. It gets passed off to the customers. And so I guess he doesn't really care that he's paying 14% because he's really paying it to himself.
Right. That's what I'm thinking.
And the fact that an entity within the parent corporation structured that loan, in my mind, made it very questionable.
I'm sorry, the fact that...
That his own shell company
Right, there seems like there's a big conflict.
Very, very questionable.
Or at least he's found a lot of ways to make himself some money if he can...
And so then he wanted to get that money back very quickly. So it was over a three-year period. Normally you would spread that over a longer period. So what happened with that high interest rate, spreading the loan over a shorter period of time, the residents there, and just to give you an idea, this isn't, I think your husband knows about Dalhousie Golf Course because I think he's golfed
there. Yes, he does.
That's a nice area, a lot of big homes there. We're not talking about them. They probably wouldn't have noticed a rate increase, quite frankly. But this isn't that kind of neighborhood. They're just outside the city limits because the cost of housing is a little bit cheaper. They're families, a lot of retirees, some very young families. In fact, we had a town hall meeting, and it was a great opportunity to kiss babies because there were a lot of them there. So very young families. So you people that don't have a lot of money, it's their first home, their starter home, or maybe their retirement home. So they don't have a lot of money. Well, the sewer price increase to them went up 476%.
Incredible. Now, that's from what to what? What number do you know?
The water went up from about $25 to $152, which was
for an average
608% increase. Yeah, per house. And that rate increase actually took effect this past August 11th.
You know, I think even somebody who lives on the Dalhousie golf course grounds would say an increase like that is outrageous.
So my bill, unfortunately, will not do anything for the Hillcrest subdivision. That's in court. Hopefully that'll be resolved. But the reason I filed this bill is because this is not a lone neighborhood out there that just happened to be in my district. There's these little water corporations out there all over the state. And, you know, where you live, there may not be one in your district, but I can tell you as you get further out into the rural areas, there's many of them across the state. And we don't want that to happen to anyone. So, you know, I think the arrangement of this, you know, violated the fundamental tenet of a compact by shifting risk from the investors where it rightly belonged. I mean, this is an investor-owned utility, private investors.
Right. The risk should belong with the investors. Yeah. I agree with you. Can we go through your language that's in here? Because
sure.
Even though you said it's been voted out of committee, I just want to make sure that I'm clear on what it is that it says and what you intend for it to do. So the first subsection under Section 1, the subsection 1 was to describe an eligible lending institution. Now, based on your story, I understand why that definition is in there.
Exactly.
Now I want to go back into looking at the definition and see how it's worded. So a financial institution. So it's a financial institution. Would that preclude something like the shell company that you spoke about from being able to?
Well, yeah, this defines it as Elder will make commercial or agricultural loans or, you know, discount purchases, you know, if you've got a loan somewhere else and then they buy it from you. So it's trying to avoid what happened here where he gave himself a loan at a very high interest rate.
All right, I want to ask one question about that because it says a financial institution that is eligible to make various kinds of loans. So does the definition of eligible, is that somewhere in statute where that it should maybe refer to, that we talk about who is what institutions are qualified as eligible? Because
I believe that's already in statute.
Well, if it is, that's great. It should be. But I wonder if we need to reference it under subsection eligible as defined under subsection whatever it is. That would be helpful to me because, to me, and maybe we're going to get into this. No, a financial institution, I'm sure that must be defined in statute, too. We need to know what that means, and we need to know what eligible means because, frankly, if you want to call yourself a financial institution, for example, if somebody is selling a building that they own and they're financing it, are they then a financial institution? And they're certainly eligible if they have the funding to be able to finance it. So I just want to make sure
right.
We're clear on what you're trying to avoid.
Research looked that up to make sure what that definition includes, if that's already in statute.
Or if we just need to reference it. So financial institution and eligible are the concerns that I'm looking at, only because if you just look at that as plain language, well, financial institution, you know, I don't know that the company, the shell company that this particular person used would qualify under that term or not, but certainly eligible seems pretty, just to me, may mean that they have the ability, the money.
Sure.
So, okay, let's go to subsection 2. So now you're starting to break this down by
right.
The and sewer corporation.
I came up with those, I think on my original bill, you notice I had a Senate committee substitute for that. And I think I had a higher threshold for the customers, but working with American Water on this bill, that we
now,
decided
American Water
that
in Cape Girardeau? No, you don't have American Water in
we
that
don't.
Area.
No.
Right.
But American Water has gone out and bought some of these troubled systems before. If it was close to where their lines were in that, and they went out and purchased
Right, they continued to acquire.
And so
right.
they suggested these numbers, which would be more in line with what's going on now.
All right, so you're defining a very small sewer corporation as one that provides service to 500 or fewer customer connections, and I guess it says it that way because would an apartment complex be one customer connection, for example?
No, they'd be individual.
They would?
Yes.
Even though that's not
the
where the
of
utility
meters.
Company...
Customer
oh, the number of
would be
meters.
The number of
it's
meters.
Based on the number of meters. Okay, I'm just going to note that to myself. Okay. And then a very small water corporation, same thing. 500 or fewer customer connections. And again, that's what you meant, right. Based on the number of meters.
So that put the Hillcrest subdivision with it line here with 218 residents and 20 apartment dwellers, 238 total, plus the small business there, the convenience store gas station.
Which just counts as 1 meter, right?
Yes.
And so I'm wondering, do you have the rationale for 500? I know it...
Three senators standing. Senator from Franklin, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Seeking unanimous consent to introduce some very special guests.
Hearing no objection, you may proceed with your introduction of guests.
Thank you, Mr. President. Today we have with us a group of pro-life students from St. Francis Borgia High School here. They're coming up here advocating on issues that they strongly believe in. They are back here at the rear of the chamber. If I could get them to stand for us here this morning, I would appreciate if the body would make them feel very welcome.
Would the guest of the senator from Franklin please rise, and would the body please make them welcome to the Missouri Senate chamber. Senator from the 24th, you may proceed. Senator from Callaway, what purpose do you seek recognition?
I seek unanimous consent to enter these very special guests, and I am sorry to interrupt debate.
Hearing no objection, you may proceed with introduction of special guests.
President, on your left and my right, I have the Mexico High School Fine Arts Department that here today to witness a little bit of their government in action, and I would like the body to please make them welcome.
Would the guest of Senator Callaway please rise, and would the members of the Senate please make them welcome to the Senate chamber. Senator from the 24th, you may proceed with your inquiry.
Mr. President, so I was just curious as to whether there was a rationale for the 500.
That was after working with American Water, who buys up some of these corporations themselves, and they wanted the latter.
And I'm sorry, they said 500 was?
Yeah, because before I was working with American Water, I had... a small sewer corporation that provides service to 8,000 or fewer customers and a small water corporation that provided service to 8,000 or fewer customers.
Wow.
That was, you can see there's quite a difference between 500 and 8,000.
Yes, I would say that's about 7,500 difference.
Their recommendation when they told me the consequences of this and moved it down to 500.
Okay. So as we continue to go through it, maybe I'll understand better the number 8,000 versus 500 and why that's beneficial to Missouri American Water or why they requested that. All right, section 2, and this is still your language, so I'm going to go through all of your language with
sure.
you. So the commission shall not grant a certificate of convenience and necessity under subsection 1 of section 393.170 to any very small sewer corporation or very small water corporation until the applicant seeking such certificate furnishes evidence of its operational and financial feasibility. Let's just start there real quick.
Right. And that was important because when you look back at the purchase of this, when you look at the debt-to-equity ratio that I mentioned, 19% equity, 19% equity, 81% debt. You can see that that wasn't very conducive to financial stability. No, and that's why no bank would have loaned this individual investor that kind of money when you only put up 19% equity and the rest is all in debt.
Right. So, you know what? I don't know what a certificate of convenience is. Convenience and necessity.
Yeah.
Right. What is that?
Well, it's just like in healthcare, you know, is this necessary? Is there some other way to do it? Is this a requirement? You know, no other way can do it. So that's what the kind of the convenience of necessary is.
All right, and Section 393.170 is where that's defined, but this certificate is what you need in order to serve communities? In other words, we've defined
supposed to acquire or construct, you know, the water sewer system through debt financing. You want to make sure that, you know, you demonstrate a need for that in there. And obviously,
okay.
There wasn't, yeah.
All right. So they're just asking. They want to make sure that before they issue this for these very small companies, that we know that they're financially able to acquire them and to provide the necessary and adequate service.
Right.
Okay. Then we're going to go on. I feel bad reading this aloud, but I want to go through it and I want to talk to you about it as we go. So I'm on line 3 on page 2.
Line 3 on page 2?
Yes.
Okay.
So in addition to the other requirements, the commission may establish by rule, the applicant shall provide a feasibility study that includes plans and specifications for the sewer or water system. The estimated cost of construction and operation of the system during the first 3 years of operation, plans for financing, proposed rates and charges, and an estimate of the number of customers, revenues, and expenses. So what they are saying, or what you are saying in this portion of the legislation, is that the commission has the ability to set up the rules about how to engage in purchasing.
Right.
Okay. And so my question there would be, you know, are utilities like, oh.
Mr. President.
3, Senator Sanding, Senator from the 13th. What purpose do you seek recognition?
Mr. President, I seek recognition for unanimous consent to introduce a very special guest.
Hearing no objection, Senator, you may proceed.
Mr. President. On your right and my left, our former colleague is over there traveling incognito. I don't know if you recognize him, but Representative Ed Weilberger is here from the Great North. And I would ask that his former colleagues in this body make him feel welcome.
He's here with
the Recorder of Deeds.
Would the guest of the Senate of the 13th and a fellow colleague please stand, and would the Missouri Senate please make him welcome to the chamber. Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you. The Public Service Commission may put these, has the option of putting these rules into place, but if the Public Service Commission is, if we're giving them, I'm not sure we need to give them permission in statute, but if we are giving them permission to put certain rules into place and certain parameters, isn't it under their purview to decide what those are? So I wonder why we even spell them out.
Well, because according to this last purchase, a lot of these things weren't done. You know, if I was on the PSC, I would have never allowed them to purchase it with 19% equity. We talk here about plans for financing. I wouldn't have done you got a 14% loan when interest rates are zero. The wonderful proposed rates, you know, they're going up for sewer 476%, and
Right. Well, I actually see a shall in there that I didn't notice as I was reading through it. So it says they may establish by rule, they can establish other things, other requirements by rule, but these are a shall. They shall establish this feasibility study that includes, all right, so let's think about this. Feasibility study that includes plans and specifications for the sewer water system, the estimated cost of construction and operating system during the first 3 years of operation, plans for financing, proposed rates and changes, and an estimate of the number of customers, revenues, and expenses. Now, a big company like Missouri American Water can do that. This is part of what they do all the time.
That's correct.
Smaller companies that may, I think this is a pretty big burden on some smaller companies. So I think when we go to places like Missouri American Water or other large water providers or utilities, monopoly utilities, we have to be careful about how we're willing to let them dictate what the PSC needs to look for. Right. I understand the problem you're trying to make sure it never happens again. I just wonder how many, and maybe we'll hear from somebody, I don't know, but how many potential companies or purchasers of these small areas we knock out because they can't meet.
Well, I've never received a phone call or an email during testimony. No one testified against it. So unless everyone was asleep at the wheel and didn't realize it, then I would think that they were okay with that. And you know, I know we have to be concerned with burdens on the business, being a business person myself, but you have to go one step beyond that. And, well, what's the burden on the customers? That's why we talk about the proposed rates.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you, and that's part of the reason that I'm having difficulty with this legislation overall is because I do think that it hurts the customer at the expense of the utility. But I'll get there later. I just want to get through your part. Okay. If the applicant proposes to acquire or construct the water or sewer system through the issuance of debt financing, such financing is not provided by an eligible lending institution, which earlier, we called financial institution.
That's what happened here.
Yeah. The applicant shall demonstrate that the terms and conditions of such debt financing are reasonable. Okay. So maybe 14%. Interest in an environment where we're at a very low interest rate is not. And so that leaves that to the PSC, I'm thinking.
Yes, it
right?
does.
Okay. All right. In addition to other requirements, the commission may establish by rule the applicant for a certificate of convenience and necessity for a very small water corporation or very small sewer corporation shall demonstrate that it has the capability to construct and operate such a water or sewer system, including evidence from the Missouri Department of Natural Resources and local authorities, if applicable, that it has all necessary construction and operating permits and licenses. All right, so again, now we're talking about somebody who wants to build the water or sewer facility has to demonstrate that they're in good financial stead, that they know what they're doing, that they have the appropriate construction people
correct.
Lined up to do that, should that be the case. So this is not necessarily an acquisition. This is a establishing a new, right? I think that's what it's.
Yes.
Okay, so. And that this is a requirement. They shall demonstrate those capabilities. Okay. In issuing a certificate of convenience and necessity to a very small sewer corporation or small water corporation, the commission may establish conditions that are reasonable in the circumstances, including a requirement that the very small sewer corporation or very small water corporation submit to a periodic review of the reasonableness of its rates no less frequently than once every 5 years. Well, that's interesting, isn't it?
And originally, I think in my original bill, I had every 3 years, if I'm not mistaken, and the PSC said we don't really need it that frequently. Every 5 years would be more appropriate.
The PSC said that?
Yes.
Wow, that's really of interest to me. Okay. All right. We're going to go to, and we're still on your bill on page 3. I think it goes to the middle of page 4, if I remember correctly.
Yes, okay. We're still on there, page 3.
Okay, so the next section, section 3. In establishing the rates for service rendered by a small sewer corporation or water corporation, the commission shall approve for recovering rates only those operating and capital costs that are prudently and reasonably incurred. Okay, so, right. The very small sewer corporation or water corporation shall have the burden of establishing the prudence of its operating and capital costs. In determining the prudence of any operating or capital costs, the commission may consider whether such cost was determined by a competitive bid process. Okay. So the operating and capital costs are just the bit outside of the cost of the water to the ratepayer that they've done things in a prudent manner.
Right, which is what our
expectation would always be with a monopoly utility.
Yes.
But they're only going to have to prove that once every 5 years.
Correct.
Interesting. A lot of stuff happens in 5 years.
Right, but
those are going to be some pretty significant rate cases when the time comes.
But apparently, with the small, or in this case, very small water districts, that didn't happen that often where they needed to review it every 3 years.
Well, I understand that once they're built, I guess, but operating and capital costs. So capital costs includes the building. I think 5 years is a long time to wait for a full rate case. But I'm just going to move ahead and just kind of get a handle on what it is you're doing. Okay. Then I'm on line 10. In addition, in determining the prudence of a capital project, the commission may consider whether such project was reviewed and approved by the Missouri Department of Natural Resources. Tell me about that, because I'm not sure.
Well, because there were a lot of issues from the Department of Natural Resources under the old ownership, and unfortunately they continued even under the new ownership. For example, I got a picture from one of my constituents out there, and there's, and I'm not exaggerating, I'll call it green slime.
Ugh.
Running down the street because the systems have backed up. In fact, this area has been under a boil water order more often than you can imagine, and for sometimes very long period of time, which really hurt that small convenience store because they don't make a lot of money on the gasoline. They make it on the Pepsi they sell.
Sure.
And now with the boil water, they couldn't sell the dispenser type of drink. They could sell it by the bottle, but they couldn't sell it from a dispenser, and that's where you get most of your profits.
Right. So, okay, I don't want to ask you how those Pepsi machines work, but they mix that syrup with water that comes through the, okay. All right. Yeah, I could see that would be, I'm sure this has ramifications. So, in St. Louis County where I live, during the summer, we had somebody hit a pole, which caused a 10 seconds at the most, I think it was less than that, blip in the electricity that fed to a Missouri American Water plant, and they said that they couldn't be sure that the water was safe, so a boil order went into effect for even less than a 24-hour period. But the things that happen in that 24-hour period, so schools, businesses were affected, so restaurants and businesses were absolutely affected.
Yes.
And I saw people at the grocery store, because I went and did this too, going and buying bottled water. There were schools that were impacted. If I'm not mistaken, some kids were sent home from some schools, so it affected a large enough area that, things shut down when you're fearful about having clean water.
Yeah,
now,
particularly with these young families out there with babies,
Right, absolutely. So so the idea that you have to boil everything or you have to go out and get water, and it's not convenient. And, think of, people, families with young babies, senior citizens who are in their homes who maybe don't have transportation right away or access, and now they're to have a drink of water, they're boiling the water, and So that advisory, which surprised me that this reaction with a 10-second power outage, 10 seconds or less power outage, would create a situation where Missouri American Water couldn't guarantee that their water was safe was shocking to me, frankly, especially in St. Louis County, where we've been paying an ISRIS charge for since 2003. But I'll get back to that.
And
okay.
Senator, you know, that happened here at one point. I was going out to eat at Steak and Shake, and the interior was closed because they were under a boil water permit. You could go through the drive-thru. You couldn't order any drinks, but you could go through the drive-thru, but they didn't even have the dining room open. So I'm just being
makes
in
you
the,
wonder how people
the restaurant
wash their
service
hands, right?
business myself, I can imagine, whoa,
right?
What does that do to the bottom line?
Wait. You were driving through a Steak and Shake? Is that just
to
check out the competition? Or?
No, I like eating at Steak and Shake. I know, I work for McDonald's, but you know, you have
right.
to have a change
But you know,
of
you got
to
always
well.
Know what the other guy's doing, right?
Right.
So, not serving soda through the drive thru.
I hope my boss isn't listening.
Yeah. I'm thinking the same thing. All right, we want to rewind there. Mr. President, can we do that for a minute? All right, so now we're on section four. Okay, we're going to learn a whole lot about each other through this little inquiry. Okay. No entity may acquire either the stock or assets of a very small sewer water corporation without obtaining approval from the commission, which apparently we said did happen in that case.
They did give them permission to buy it.
Okay. In the event that an entity seeks approval from the commission to acquire either the stock or the assets of a very small sewer corporation or water corporation, the commission shall not approve such acquisition, so shall not approve unless it finds that the acquisition is not detrimental to the public interest. Gosh, it seems like, in making that finding, the commission shall examine the operational and financial capability of the acquiring entity. I think we already sort of covered that.
Yes.
If the acquiring entity proposes to issue debt to finance all or a part of the acquisition, and such debt is not being provided by an eligible lending institution, the acquiring entity, as part of its application, shall provide evidence of the reasonableness of the terms and conditions of such debt financing. Now, it's interesting to me because in terms of mergers and acquisitions, and this is I think that the standard that the acquisition is not detrimental to the public interest is maybe not a high enough standard. So that's a place where I think that your legislation isn't strong enough. Like, I think it needs to be not only not a detriment to the public, because I'm not sure what that means over the long haul, but in other states around us, I know under their mergers and acquisitions portion of their utility purchases, they have a higher standard than we do. So it's an area that we may want to go back and look at and talk about, well, what would really be, what we want to make sure is this is advantageous to the people in the community whose utility is being acquired.
Sure.
So I think I have some information out there about mergers and acquisitions, and I may want to amend that portion of the bill, but we'll talk about it. I'll bring you up to talk about it again. I'm not sure if it's on my desk yet or not, but we'll go through that. Let me just make a note here. Okay. Because if we can change that standard here and in other places, I think that would, for the long haul, make for a better situation in the state of Missouri. Okay. Then, if the acquiring entity proposes to... Okay, we talked about that. And eligible lending institution, the inquiring entity as part of its application shall provide evidence of the reasonableness of the terms and conditions of such debt financing. Okay. The commission shall have the authority to promulgate rules to implement the provisions of this section. Any rule or portion of... Okay, then we do the non-severable portion, the 536
right.
portion.
Right.
Okay. So we've pretty much gone through your entire...
My portion of the bill.
Your portion. And again, I'm going to see if I can get some information about, and maybe Missouri American Water can send it from, why we went from 8,000 down to 500, what they hope that will do. I'm curious, do they probably don't anticipate purchasing any, I mean, I don't know.
Well, I've understood they have bought some smaller, I can't tell you the number of
right.
people that live there, but they've bought smaller ones if it was advantageous because it was in close proximity to where they already had American Water available, and so then they purchased them, which, you know, was actually quite a good deal for that small subdivision that they purchased.
Right, so I wonder if they are not concerned about the ones that are 500 or under, or I would be curious
to know
that.
I think they're concerned about all of them.
Well, I understand. I mean, not concerned about acquiring or purchasing them. So, all right. Thank you for the inquiry. I'm going to come back to you when I have that amendment, if we think it makes sense. It may need to go in another place in the bill, too. So, appreciate the inquiry. Mr. President.
Senator from the 24th, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Senator from Barton.
Senator from Barton, you yield from inquiry from the Senator from the 24th.
I yield.
You may proceed.
All right, Senator, thank you.
You're welcome.
The first thing I'd like to do is finish going through what else is new in the legislation.
Sure. The first thing is that prior to this, we had a revenue cap, recovery cap, that we've now changed to a dollar. We have a Senate colleague who really wanted this to be in how many dollars his constituents might see as a surcharge. And, of course, the surcharge would only happen if the water company collected less revenue than they had been authorized to collect based on the rate case that they had just come in for. They have to come in for a rate case to start this process. PSC authorizes a certain value for the water. They predict how much volume that will represent according to the consumers, and then they do that math themselves and say, all right, that's going to be equivalent to this much revenue for the company. If all the ratepayers buy the same amount of water that they've averaged over whatever period of time the PSC picks. And that was a percentage before. There was concern that
Will you show me in the bill? I'm sorry to interrupt you. Show me where you're talking about. So I have notes on the old version of the bill, and I want to make sure that I'm seeing where we are inserting new pieces.
Right. Find that section. I don't know if I marked mine up last night or not, but this one, let's just use the summary to get it. Changing title, I guess. They added the bill that you just talked about. Okay, this is going to be section 393.1605,
okay.
Which is page 6 and 7.
Right, 5 is where it starts, I think. 393.1605 starts on page 5. And...
Right. So the and that talks about, all right, within 30 days of the last day of each annual period, because there are annual true-ups. At the end of each period, whatever that period is, and that period will be established relative to the rate case. Whenever the rule comes out, that's going to establish what the period is, and so that would be the start of a 12-month period.
I'm sorry. Whenever the rule comes out.
Right. When you do your general
rate
case.
From the rate case.
Right, you do your general rate case. That will establish the period
that
is governed, or the beginning of the period. And 12 months from the beginning of that period is when the company has to come back in and do the true-up. That's when they determine whether there will be a surcharge or whether there will be a refund to you, the customer. We'll make you the customer for this discussion.
Well, I am one of their customers. So are you, are you a Missouri American Water customer?
I am not. I'm on rural water.
Now, does this ISRIS in this legislation, so currently the ISRIS has been applying only in St. Louis County, and we know Missouri American Water.
This doesn't have anything to do with the ISRIS.
Okay.
Right.
All right. Okay.
Right. No, this
the
is,
RSM.
This is, right. This is.
Okay. It doesn't have that amendment anywhere.
Right. This doesn't bring in any additional money at all to the water company. The value of the water, I mean, the... This simply locks in a revenue stream instead of just a price. But
right.
But the revenue stream is based on a calculation from the price.
Right. So we're going to have a difference in opinion about who that's good for, but we'll get to that in a minute.
We'll talk about that.
So, right.
But the $6,
so take
the
me back, because
I
am trying to figure out in the in the new bill, like I'm having trouble comparing it to my old one. It's a different font and everything. So I need you to.
Right.
So it's a different size.
I think it's on the bottom of page 6. I'm trying to find the. You know, since we write out the numbers here, they're not as easy to spot. Any surcharge resulting from the RSM will be applied by a volumetric rate, a customer class by tariff. That just means that the surcharge will be according to how much water you use.
Where are you reading?
Bottom of page 6.
Which line?
I'm starting with line 22. Applied by volumetric rate and by class, customer class, during the recovery period, and we'll talk about recovery period in just a minute, while any credit will be allocated equally among customers within each customer class. Now, the credit, I'm going to step aside just a minute. The credit, if you get a credit on your bill, you get that immediately. If you were overcharged $10 last year, then when they do the true-up, they determine you were overcharged $10, on your next bill, you'll get a $10 credit.
Well, it says as soon as administratively feasible, so it doesn't say on your next bill, because I remember that from the old version.
Right, as soon as the first bill that they can get it to.
Well, that's not what it says.
Right, but that's what it will be. That's why it says administrative, yeah.
Well, okay.
But it's going to be, first, as soon as they have the number, they're going to put it on the, they're going to credit it. I mean, that's the intention of this, is they're going to credit that immediately. I'm sure the Public Service Commission would be very interested if that didn't happen. because the Public Service Commission is the one that determines how that's going to be done.
Well, we're spelling everything out for the Public Service Commission.
No,
I think we should spell this out.
This is done before. This is the annual true-up that is done before the Public Service Commission. So if you're a commissioner or if you're a staff, my guess is you're going to say, okay, it looks like everybody's due this credit. When are they going to get that credit? And the company would say, well, we're going to have that done by...
As soon as we can, as soon as our administration gets around to it, as soon as our clerical people get around to issuing the check.
My guess is the Public Service Commission would probably require a month, but we can ask them.
All right, well, we can talk about that. I'm just, you know, again, I'm looking at this through the eye of representing the constituents in my district who are all captive ratepayers.
Right, let's turn, I thought it was the bottom of page 6, exactly the top of page 7. Adjustment surcharge to customers shall not be designed to exceed a per customer average of $4 per month.
All right, whoa. Wait a minute. So talk to me about that. $4 a month. I heard you say that in your opening remarks. So
Let's talk about my
water bill. Let's say it's 100, just to make it easy. One particular month in the summer, it's $100.
That won't matter. Monthly bills won't matter. It's not about your water bill. It's about the total accumulation of revenues over an entire year
what you're proposing is a kind of budget billing for me.
It's like annual. Right. It's not budget billing exactly. That's not the perfect analogy, but I have used that analogy.
All right, give me a perfect analogy, or explain
to me
what it looks
like. I have a perfect
analogy. So let's say over a year's period of time, in 12 months, I use, let's just make it easy, round numbers, I use $1,000 worth of water.
Of water, right.
Tell me what that looks like on my monthly bills. Okay, let's use $1,200. Make it really easy. 12 months out of the year. So tell me what my monthly bill is going to look like.
Well, your monthly bill is going to be exactly what it's going to be billed according to your usage. So if you use half your normal water 1 month, it's going to be $50.
Okay.
If you use twice your normal water usage the next month, it's going to be $200. And that's going to all be accumulated. And at the end of the year, when the company comes in for true-up, they're going to authorize the corporate. So it's all customers put together. If it boils down for your case to $1,200, they've authorized $1,200 of recovery that year because that's been your usage in the past. Then they come in and they say, well, we collected $1,200 from the senator, and that's what we guessed, and so everything's even. Now, if they come in and they say, well, we've collected $1,400 because we had some dry months, and so she actually used more water some months than she otherwise would have used, then they're going to say, well, you got to give her those $200 back.
So I'm a little bit confused about that. So they're still billing me based on my usage each month.
Absolutely.
You said. Okay, that's what I want to know. All right, let's go on. What else is in here? I'm going to have to give this new section some thought. All right, what else is in here
Yeah, the $4 per month cap is on residential customers.
All right, what kind of cap is there on non-residential?
When we go to commercial customers that are doing things for sale or resale, then that's going to be a 10% monthly charge. We're talking about use of potentially thousands per month. And so to allow the recap of only $4 per month for them would really not make sense to the rest of the ratepayers. And so the recap is higher there. Now, let me tell you quickly what happens, because the $4 is probably way more than adequate. If you look back historically, what you typically will see in these variations is that you'd see what would equate to around a dollar a month would be the maximum that is likely. But who knows? I mean, we end up like California. It could be much higher than that.
Well, we're not going to end up like California. They have a water problem, and we have lots of water.
Well, I'm talking about with the drought that they have.
Right, I know. They have. I used to live there during a drought.
But what I'm saying is if we had their problem, then $4 might be reasonable. Frankly, $4 is probably more than adequate. I doubt if they'll ever hit $4 in terms of needing that much in terms of a surcharge. But if let's assume they did. Let's assume we had a terrible situation. They actually did need more than $4 surcharge in order to make up the revenue authorized by the Public Service Commission and reviewed at the true-up. Then those dollars would be rolled over to the next year, but they would come in under the cap. They would be a part of the new $4 cap, so they don't get just to keep accumulating that. You don't just keep adding, but you roll it over because it was in fact value that you delivered, that you had there, but it was not paid for, and so this allows you to recover that eventually, unless the circumstances continues and you may never recover it because it continues to have to roll over into the next cap. And so theoretically you could eventually have a rollover that was then exceeded the cap, and you wouldn't get any money back. Now, that's, totally unreasonable. That's not going to happen.
Right, if you're rolling over, then at some point in time, you know what? I think I have notes on this to myself. At some point in time, I'm trying to figure out where it is in the old bill.
And we're in the part now. We can work off the old bill.
The cap for the – right. Well, I just want to know – at some point in time, the cap on the consumer is going to be more than what we, I should say, the ratepayer.
The surcharge.
The surcharge.
Could exceed the cap. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Especially if you're doing rollover.
If the surcharge exceeds the cap, then that whatever there is in excess rolls over into the next year as excess. So, in other words, let's say that you needed to recover $100,000, but you could only recover $50,000 and stay under the caps, then you would roll $50,000 into the next year as unrecovered money, but it would still have to.
Hey, you're talking about the utility.
Utility,
right?
But it would come under that same cap. So it doesn't allow you to exceed the cap ever.
All right, what about when you over-earn?
You over and you give that back immediately, just as it said before.
Administratively,
that goes back in a lump sum, and it goes back immediately.
All right, I'm gonna have some more questions about that, but let me go through. Show me what else in this new version is new. That's my first question.
Right.
I want to know.
That was one of the news that there is, instead of being a percentage cap on residential customers, it's now a $4 per month cap. Now, this is done annually, so you kind of have to switch back and forth in your thinking to are we talking about an annual situation or monthly? But you get billed monthly. So this says that you will never see more than and this will be identified on the bill, you will never see more than a $4 surcharge because of a revenue authorization that was not met per month.
And so this surcharge or tax, as I'm going to refer to it, again,
well, it's really not a tax because it's not an increase in cost of the water. It's just a smoothing of the cost. Like back to your analogy of
the smoothing of the cost in order for the utility to not have volatility.
In order for both of us, for me as a consumer and the utility.
As a consumer, I expect it to be based on my usage.
But the risk here, Senator, is the weather. That's a general risk. That's a risk to
me. It's a risk to every business.
That's a risk to me and to the company.
Risk to every business. You know what? It's a risk to every business that has anything to do with heat and cold.
Part of the problem here, Senator, is that 90% of what you pay in your $100 monthly bill, $90 of that is fixed cost. It never changes. It never goes away. 10% of it is actual water usage. So what happens is if you use less water, you get 100% reduction in your cost. Another way to do this, another way to accomplish the same situation so that you're always paying the right value for your water, is to shift this to a two-part bill where you pay an access charge and a use charge. The problem with that is your access charge would be $90. And so you could use twice the amount of water and it would go up $10. You could use half the water and it would go down $5. There's almost no benefit to that. There's no incentive for efficiency if there's...
So that's the
risk on the other side.
Here's the rub, right? So if we're trying to create incentives for efficiency in a place that we have a lot of water. We have access to a lot of water here. We are not California. We are not having a drought. We have Missouri, the Mississippi. We have all kinds of
access. We have some places in northwest Missouri that do have water problems.
Well...
But you're, as a state, I mean, in general, we won't argue over that.
All right. So now I forgot where I was going with that statement. But
I'm sorry.
So access to water isn't our problem. So the reality is for Missouri American Water, for anybody to encourage us to use less, what's going to happen is this, and we know this. What's going to happen is... Our meter's going to go down, how much water we use, and our price per...
Absolutely
yes,
not.
Absolutely,
absolutely
it
not.
Is.
Here's
because
what's going to happen.
They
Here's
have
what's
to.
Happening is that you're basically... And this is the way one person expressed it to me. They were trying to visualize this. And they said, so you're paying 2 cents and getting a dollar back, right? And that's probably the best picture for it. You're saying, okay, I'm mitigating my risk some with 2 cents... per dollar spent, and however you want to equate that to your bill, and so I may actually have to pay an extra 2 cents. Now that would be 2% if you want to use it in percentage. I may have to actually pay an extra 2% over in one period because of underusage, but I'm saving a dollar, so I'm getting 98 cents back. So if I cut my water bill, I am in fact. Paying an extra 2 cents that month, but I'm getting 98 cents back whenever I recover the water. I'm getting a dollar's worth.
I actually don't see how that does that in this bill. I don't. I'm not following you
well,
at
let's,
all.
Let's go to your $100 a month water bill.
Okay.
Back
Which
again.
Never the same. But
if you drop, I know, but if you cut your usage by 50% under this bill. That water bill will go down by 50%. It'll go down to $50, right?
Well,
this doesn't
I'm not
change
sure.
the way that's billed.
Okay.
It's gonna you're gonna get
well,
a bill.
My water bill
you're
is, get
a
is made up of
bill.
More than just my water usage.
Right.
As
you're
you
gonna
stated
get a
earlier,
monthly
so.
Bill based on your water usage. Now, at the end of the year, when the true up, you've got something there. When we get to the true up period. Because you've been off, because the company was authorized a revenue stream rather than just a cents per water. It was equated from that, but because it was mathematically put in a revenue stream, then they're going to say, all right, you sold less water than you thought, but we authorized you more revenue than that. And so next year, we're going to, because we authorized the revenue, not just the value, and because that is the, for the purposes recognizing that weather is a real hindrance to somebody who's 90% of their business in fixed cost, we're going to authorize you to actually recover some of that. Now that's the year that it actually helps the company and the customer, in my opinion. And I don't know if we'll ever agree on that, but I am absolutely convinced that this reduces the risk on both the customer and the company. Now, because the risk is the weather, and anything we can do to mitigate the weather risk benefits both of us. Now, here's what happens in the year two. This is the year after we trued up. The water usage, because we had a wet year, was less than anticipated. And so the company comes into the commission, and the commission says, okay, we authorize you to get this much revenue. How much did you get? Company says, we got this much. And they say, okay, well, then we'll – and they look at our – they look at the other elements of the true-up, and they say, well, then we'll authorize you to recover that, and we'll authorize you to recover it at this rate and over this period of time. And that's going to be a maximum of 12 months. And so let's just assume that they gave the full 12 months, and they said, okay, in order to recover that, you are going to have to apply a you can apply a $1 – or, excuse me, let's say a one cent surcharge to each gallon of water. All right, so now instead of getting – and now when you save 50 gallons – or when you drop 50 gallons, instead of saving $50, you save $49.50. That does not disincentivize. That's what I mean about a dollar for 2 cents, is that you still save virtually the same up to a maximum of whatever that percentage is on your bill. So this says a maximum surcharge of $4 a bill. So if, in fact, you were allocated the $4 charge, then that would mean you would save 50, but you would actually only save 46, because there would be a – so I don't see that as a disincentive, Senator.
Well, I'm not – you know, again, I'm not sure I'm following you, or that as we speak on the floor, I have the ability to think through how all these formulas work.
This really sounds more complicated than it is.
Well, it is. This, you know what? Utility bills are complicated. And look, we have cleared out the chamber, which, you know, I'm hopeful that people are listening in their offices to what's going on, because this, what I consider to be sort of a deregulation of our monopoly utilities that's been going on for the last several days.
My biggest frustration over this particular bill is that the process really is very, very simple, but trying to explain it is not simple. And there is a frustration. I mean, it's a frustration for me.
Well,
it's a frustration,
and let me just say in a general sense,
but it really is.
It has to be clear to you and me and everybody in this room that the water company would not be doing this. I mean, this is brought forward.
Oh, this is a, it
if,
reduces
unless
their
it
risk,
was helpful to them.
But it also reduces my risk as a consumer.
But it doesn't, and that's where I disagree. Unless there's something in this new part that I haven't seen.
Let me take you to an extra step that is an additional benefit to you as a consumer. All right, right. One of the problems with the weather risk on the water company is that there are times whenever they have to reschedule cash flow issues because of a wet year. And they're not selling the water. They may have planned some infrastructure upgrades. They may have planned something else. But the money's just not there because it's a dry year. The revenues are not coming in. And so what they're telling me is with this very small change that they can be a whole lot more efficient in terms of scheduling work, in terms of providing firm dates.
But you know what? Their access to additional capital is not the problem of the ratepayer. Their access to additional capital. These are particularly Missouri
American. It absolutely is, because the ratepayers who ends up paying the bills if they don't have access to capital.
But they do have access to capital, and I want to be clear.
The access to capital is at a cost. Anything we can do to reduce the cost to the company reduces the cost to the ratepayer.
And that sounds reasonable, but no, I don't believe it. I believe that this bill, as I know it, under its earlier form, before you distributed the substitute today, what this bill does is it puts the ratepayers, it puts them at risk at the expense of making sure these water companies are getting all the cash they want and need.
Let's take a dry year. In a dry year, your water usage goes up. Now, what happens today is that money all goes to the company. Today, if your water usage goes up, let's say we expected $1,200 a year this year for your water. You end up, it's a dry year, you put a pool in, So it's a dry year, you decide to put a pool in, your water usage triples that year. You weren't expected to triple that year. Yeah, you're paying the water.
You're still paying for the water.
I'm not denying that. You're going to pay per gallon charges on that water. Comes to the true-up. And let's say everybody experienced that. So across the Missouri American Water Network, revenues were way above what the commission had authorized. Now, under the old plan, absent this bill, the company keeps every one of those dollars. There is no mechanism to restore them. They keep them. That's exactly what happens today. There is no true-up. There is no reconciliation. It's
well,
an X rate case.
Let me
finish because I think this is important, and I think it will be subsidy for you. So there's no way to bring those dollars back to the customer. Those dollars are all at risk and they're gone. Now, what happens under this is that it comes into the commission. The commission looks at that and they say, you know what, you collected way more revenue than we had projected. And so all of that that's above the line has to go back to the customers at the next available opportunity. And the commission would have to say, when's that going to be available? They're going to say, well, we can do it on the July bill. And they say, okay, we want it on the July bill. And you will get a full credit for that. That credits you would never have recovered otherwise. Now, we're not talking hundreds of dollars here. We're talking about $10 or $20 a year.
We're not talking hundreds of dollars here for an individual customer. But
right,
look at this
right.
scheme of things. And what I'm saying is that you are sort of socializing the business risk among the customers instead of making the company whose business it is to.
You're not socializing the risk. You're simply recognizing the risk and trying to mitigate it. By your budget billing. I mean, what's the purpose of budget billing?
Right,
you used that analogy.
And you said it wasn't a good
analogy.
Well,
I said it's not perfect. I didn't say it wasn't good. I said it's not perfect.
You know what, Senator? I really want to get through your bill, so I'm actually going to inquire of someone else.
I'll tell you what,
so
Senator,
I think I'm going to
lay the bill over, give us our lunch break here.
Great.
And maybe you and I can talk further on this.
All right, I want to go back and read it, and then I'm happy to talk with you.
I may be able to draw some graphs to help both of us get
there. I've got some. My chief of staff and I are going to want to go through it.
Senator from Barton, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I'm sorry, were you inquiring of me? Sorry, excuse me, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from Barton, what purpose do you rise?
Would you please lay that bill on the informal?
That bill we will be placed on the informal calendar.
Sorry, sir.
Senator from Cole, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements. Announcements. Hearing none, Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m. this day.
Senator from Cole moves that the Senate stand in recess till 2 p.m. this day. All those in favor of that motion say aye. Those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate will stand in recess till 2 p.m. this date.